The Little Old Lady with Five Cows, a class discussion in three parts. Part one, 28 minutes. We didn't read this tale out together before we began to discuss it, so if you haven't read the tale, you should do that first. It's on the website. And then I began the discussion by asking people to talk about what they observed about the story or what their thoughts were about it before we went through it together.
Well, one of the things is that, taking the wrong turn, the feminine wasn't in touch with the masculine. There was a separation. And there's, by not the lack of communication between the alchemical king and queen, the results can be going down a wrong road and devastation. But I guess it seemed optimistic to me because although I didn't like how drastic it was when he made the wrong turn, it seemed like it was larger than life. Most of our decisions in life aren't to be either become an accountant or drug dealer. There's lesser consequences for being out of touch with less of your feminine. So that seemed overly played. But I did like two things. One was that there's second chances. You can do that. And we were doing a little bit of disagreeing. I felt as though when the guy shot the squirrel and the arrow fell down the chimney, it seemed sometimes in life you come up, you never know what life's going to lead you, and just sometimes a mistake can actually turn out to be a very good thing. Mm-hmm. So there was some discussion about that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's kind of my, the path to success isn't solely cognitive. There are mm-hmm. other things to tap into, fortune and fate and happenstance.
I don't know, we were discussing about that fate. I mean, I definitely agree with you on the second chances. And but in a way, this whole story or these steps kind of have been defined previously. There's a section here that says that when he explains to his father how he knew this person, it looks like this was predetermined. And but I think, when we talk about fate is predetermined, or is libre albedrío, how do you say? Random.
Free choice.
Free will.
Volition.
Yeah. So I think that the discussion is also about that. The good news is that they corrected this and they made the right decisions, mm-hmm. and they happily live together. Mm-hmm. So
I wonder one thing, that if it is because he talk about the woman, but I also think it's about him, because he was the one, he left her to go by herself, and then he ended up married with the devil's daughter. And so I don't know. And it's not only the,
we're also talking about how he fell into this trick of the devil's daughter. And just by having the same appearance, not necessarily means that it's the same person. And secondly, that if you read a little bit the way it's described, this devil's daughter, she doesn't have a leg. So we found it. Have the same face, but there's some other.
It is kind of obvious.
So. Well, it shows that, I mean, to me, there's a lot of repetition. The repetition in the story sort of emphasizes that he has to undergo like some sort of growth or understanding. Like, he didn't even consider that the woman had one, that he didn't put it to, wasn't able to put it together. It was almost like it had to be called to his attention, and then mm-hmm. he was able to revisit the whole thing and with greater consciousness. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was settled.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the story's about his group.
Or interpsychically, it's like one person, right, with them masculine and feminine qualities, and the individuation of a single entity, possibly.
Yeah, I guess or something that von Franz talks about is you can, when you look at a fairy tale, you could interpret it either as a story about a man encountering his anima, or you can interpret it as a story about a woman encountering the animus.
Mm-hmm.
You could go either way. And for convenience, you tend to choose one or the other. But really, fairy stories are not about men and women, they're about archetypes.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really not, if you really, you know, if you want to be rigorous about it, you would say that they're all actually archetypal. So you have the archetypal masculine, and you have the archetypal feminine.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens between them.
Do you have to make a choice about the man encountered his anima or a woman encounter her animus? Can it be just the dynamics of any man or any woman in a resolution, basically a communication between the men, masculine and feminine?
Well, I mean, it is that, but that involves the anima and the animus. The
I mean, without the actual person being, you know, male or female, could it be do you have to even make that decision? Could that be happening to me as likely as, you know, her or anyone else?
Yeah, if you think of it intrapsychically, like I say, you can say the various archetypes, all of which we have some, all of which influence us, yes.
But everyone has anima and animus,
yes.
Individually.
Yes. But the story is really about the archetypes, which have qualities, and because of their qualities, they intersect with each other in certain kinds of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And then as human beings, we dip into that, those dynamics,
mm-hmm.
at various ages. We dip into them when we're young, and we dip into them at other ages too. So it could be a story of courtship in youth, or teenage years, but it also could be a story of psychological growth in your 50s. You know, both levels, and both in youth and in midlife or later life, these archetypes collide and intersect and affect each other. So the human psychology follows the archetypal pattern at different ages.
How old is this tale?
I don't know, but it seems to me that it's pre-Christian.
Yeah, that's right. You mentioned that. It seems subtly sexist a little bit, because the man seemed more competent, and the woman was getting confused and misdirected, and for her effort, her face was torn off. It just seemed like she wasn't as powerful. She was kind of receptive, which I guess is a feminine quality,
yeah. But
it wasn't like a real Athena kind of warrior princess. It was more of a subdued, pretty little lady.
Right. And, you know, after the marriage, the woman gets put behind a curtain. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's like pretty heavy-duty division right there.
Which probably spoke to the trends at the time of the woman being second class.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I mean, I don't know the culture, but it's... I guess it's like strict Arab cultures where women are... married women, secluded.
I wonder if that decision was made because they felt repugnant about this new bride. It could be, you know, that in our psyche we put things under or behind the curtain when or under the carpet when we don't like it.
No, but I think that was the tradition.
It happened again, I think, with the other words.
Really well.
Yeah, what do they call that garb? The Arab garb that the women wear with the
Perda or something.
Burka. Yeah, kind of burkish. Right?
Yeah, so it's pretty good.
But that's out of, theoretically, out of a deep respect for, culturally, a deep respect for the sexuality of a woman as something.
Yeah, it's certainly from a culture very different from our own, so... Well, why don't we start?
In many parts of the of the fairy tale. They talk a lot about numbers,
yes.
And
right.
I was wondering what they mean, because they repeat it at the beginning, the 5, and then the 8, and 7,
and 9,
but they are like...
They do emphasize numbers.
Yeah.
I don't know much about numbers, so I can't give you much on that. It's not something I've kind of learned much about.
Well, some of the things were, the 5 senses, and the pentagram is a very magical,
mm-hmm.
5 is a very magical number,
mm-hmm.
in the Kabbalah, and
mm-hmm.
all these different places.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of number symbolism. I wanted to think about, just start just by thinking about the little old woman. What about her? She's a peasant woman. She makes sure she gets a good bride price.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
She did good.
She's the one who harvested the plant and took it home. And then sat down to milk her cows. So that's the beginning of the story. So what do we make of her?
She's very in the world or something, very grounded or something.
Very grounded.
Or something. I mean, there's something practical, but in a very natural, functional
way. Yeah.
I feel like she's very grounded, but at the same time, she has like access to these, like the magic,
mm.
and she recognizes it because mm-hmm. she picks the plants and put it under her pillow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when...
From all the herbs she notices, which is the one that is growing differently, better than the others.
So maybe she's like a Dimitri or Gaia, kind of like goddess, you know, of a higher order than perhaps the feminine that takes the wrong turn. Maybe like one of the offspring, or...
Well, she's a maternal figure, right? She's like a,
definitely.
She's like Mother Earth, maybe earthy,
yeah.
Very connected to the natural.
Isn't I don't know anything about this at all, but isn't it how many cows you have has to do with your prosperity or your?
I'm sure.
That so if you have 5 cows, you're doing really well. I mean, that's.
And she gets more, so she does
yeah.
well. Yeah, she's fertile.
Yeah,
fertility.
Yeah, like
she's very natural, very very much connected to nature, and she kind of coordinates the whole. Actually, she plays a role throughout.
Mm-hmm.
So she coordinates the action. So I guess we could say that the whole story is being managed by Mother Nature, if you like, or being. Not entirely by Mother Nature, because there's stuff going on in heaven too, but the Earth, Mother Earth is very involved in making it happen. So another way, psychologically, this is a natural process.
Mm-hmm.
This process is part of nature. And also...
And her fertility generates the action of the story. I mean, if you're going to be literal about it, with the plant and the various things that happen.
Perfectly, yeah. And she encourages the marriage and
yeah.
insists that they get along, talk to each other, and so on and so forth.
It's vaguely reminiscent of Persephone and Dimitri.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Dimitri?
Demeter. Yeah.
Where, you know, Persephone goes to hell and she can only come up again with the pomegranate seeds. But she also had a daughter that took a voyage, took the wrong turn. But the mother does come to the rescue. You know, the earth freezes, and that's how they win her, right? Because she was so sick.
Yes.
So yeah, it seems to. I wouldn't be surprised if there was parallels.
I agree. It is a kind of a mother-daughter story. But I do think there's a relationship. I feel like those stories have bled into each other.
Mm.
Or even Gaia and Venus. Remember where, you know, she has Cronus cut off the testicles of her consort, and they fall into the sea, and Venus and Mars are born. So it's very similar voyage relationship.
I mean, another thing you could say is there are various aspects of the feminine, and the old woman represents the maternal aspect of the feminine, in contrast to the young woman, who is not maternal.
Yeah, the crone.
Yeah, well, she's not an old crone. But she's the mother. She's a maternal figure. She's not old, but she's fertile, but maternal. So the whole story is natural and occurs in the arms of Mother Nature, in a sense. And then a maiden appears with eyes of chalcedony and lips of dark stone, eyebrows like two dark sables stretching their forefeet across it towards each other. Her body was visible through her dress, her bones were visible through her body, her nerves spread this way and that like mercury were visible through her bones. What are we describing here? What is this?
Elemental.
A statue to me.
Like a statue.
Definitely, she was transparent.
Like a
transparent?
Yeah, a living statue. I mean, there's something.
Translucent.
Well, it's a kind of magical beauty, right? I mean, it's beauty to, in a magical degree.
And the way she's born, with the sound of the tambourines and the sizzle fall. I don't know what exactly means the sizzle.
Right.
Okay.
And she was milking the cows at this, you know, in the classes. what does it mean?
Well, it's interesting that if you think about it, the scissor, I hadn't thought of this before, but she's milking the cows, so we have the feminine. Again, the maternal feminine is like the milk is being produced, and then you have scissors and a tambourine, which is something of culture, right? I mean, scissors for cutting cloth and tambourine for making music, so we have a cultural element is introduced. So something we're dealing with something very elemental, the cow's milk, and then something more to do with music and artifice and appearance.
And I think it's also because it's high pitch, so it's more something that to hear, to make a noise that really disturb you in a way, or they bring you your attention.
Like consciousness raise
awareness. Yeah, because it's a high, the metal, I think that if they fall, it's high, it's more like a high pitch or
like a bell or something.
Also the bells,
the tambourine, which again is about awakening to awareness. But music and dress and cloth as it's cut and sewn creates ideas and images and aesthetic life.
The drums.
So I think it has the idea of cultural artifice and cultural creation. And then maybe that's a clue to this woman, because she's magical in her appearance. And when a woman experienced is magically beautiful, who experiences women, young women, as magically extraordinary?
After one too many drinks.
Pre-adolescent.
Pre-adolescent?
Adolescence, or just...
Well, isn't this about falling in love? I mean,
yeah.
When you're totally smitten by somebody of the opposite sex, you know, their skin seems to glow, and you know they have magical qualities. I think it's about the magical. It's a degree of beauty which is magic, and the mystery of falling in love, a crush. You know,
infatuation.
When you have that very charged experience, you know, electrical. The other person seems to be electrically charged. It kind of describes that.
Now, with reference to the scissors, it seems particularly appropriate towards birth. Number one, there's unity. Then after that becomes diversity philosophically. So you're cutting from the unity to diversity. And also, parallel to that, you're cutting the umbilical cord.
Yeah,
there is something from the greater consciousness becoming manifest, and that scissors, you know, cuts both metaphorically the unity into something diverse, and also the umbilical cord.
Yeah, so it makes distinctions. That's right. So again, this is about consciousness too, making distinctions. Mm-hmm.
Like yes. The sound of a tambourine, like getting to a level of ecstasy.
Music does that. It's
like causal.
Like trans-strumming.
Trans-strumming. But music also makes distinctions between notes, you know. It's about distinguishing sounds into different notes, and then those induce different states of consciousness. So, and the beauty of the young woman is about, it begins a conscious developmental process. You know, male and female fall in love, become strongly drawn to each other, or, you know, same sex, if that's erotic attraction, but there's a very strong draw, and then union, and then a learning process. So this is all about the creation of consciousness.
Going back to the music, why is it such a powerful force? I mean, songs can bring tears to your eyes. What's resonating within our psychology that music seems to have the ability to really take hold of us?
First thing you hear is your mother's heartbeat. So it's your first experience of other than you.
This is a very profound idea. I didn't really appreciate it in the moment, but the idea that otherness first makes itself known to the fetus in the form of the mother's heartbeat. So it's the music of the mother's heart that is the first experience of otherness. Such a profound idea if you think about the implications of that and the resonance of it. Just wanted to underline it.
The rhythm.
That's, somebody said that once. That's why music is so powerful. Because it goes in, you know, like with Alzheimer's patients, it wakes them up. Because it brings them out. It's the first sound you hear. Your mother's heart.
And then, you know, and then music is an art form like dance or painting. It's an art form. So it appeals on many different, it touches us on many levels, but it's about meaning, it's about feeling, it's about harmonies. That's such a big question. There's so many aspects in which art speaks to us, I would say, about psychological maturation. As art delves into the unconscious, brings up creative, new archetypal forms from the unconscious and makes them accessible to us and shows how they can evolve.
There seems something just particularly powerful, just maybe for me, about the music. Because, you know, you can have adolescent boys in the hood and the shaman and the drums, and it seems like a real powerful thing about the heartbeat. Is kind of interesting. More so than the statue for me, but maybe that's just me.
On the rhythmic nature of it, you know, we automatically, you know, there's another, you know, we just connect to it on a beat. We connect to beating.
Actually, your heartbeat can
get faster or slower.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we have jumps.
Yes, mm-hmm. It does. It shifts. We kind of align. And all the clocks in a room tick together. You know, they'll all tick at the same time if you live in a room together. Mm-hmm. So it's like there's a synchronicity of the sound uniting, I think. Mm-hmm. Clarifying.
And maybe even your parents' voices when you're still in the womb.
And yeah, it's a very visceral experience, music. Then the sun comes along, the Kajit Bergen, the son of the meritorious. And what's he doing?
Hunting.
Hunting for what?
Squirrels.
Squirrels?
Yeah.
And what kind of activity is that?
Young,
right? I mean, a squirrel is a very small animal to be hunting. So it's a kind of a juvenile hunting. hunting behavior.
Doesn't feed a family.
Shooting squirrels. And missing, by the way.
Not an effective hunter either.
And then when he loses his arrow, he calls up, "Old woman, take the arrow and bring it to me." What do we know about this guy?
He's arrogant.
Yeah.
Arrogant.
And also very immature, right?
Yeah.
His reactions are very immature. When he sees the maiden, he loses consciousness, then he revives and he falls in love. Right? So mm-hmm. It didn't take long. And then what does he do?
Yes.
Jumping out of his clothes.
The woman, old woman.
He runs home to mommy and daddy.
Yeah.
He runs home to mommy and daddy and says, "Give her to me."
Yes. Yeah, like a... Yeah.
Right. So there's a point being made.
I'm guessing he's a little spoiled.
he's obviously indulged and he's young. But there's another point being made here. What do you think is the psychological point?
He needs the mediation. He's not capable of forming the union by himself.
Yes. And how are his wooing skills?
He's what?
His skills at wooing. How charming is he as a man?
Not
he doesn't at all.
Actually, he claims to the little old woman, "Give this maiden, give this girl to the son of the meritorious Kankar." So he's claiming his father's name, not
his own.
His own.
Well, that's true.
He doesn't even do that.
The messenger.
Yeah, get hold of this maiden and give her to me. You see, there's going to be a marriage, but there's no psychological meeting in the beginning. There's no work, there's no getting to know the maiden. It's just, gimme. I want gimme. So it's a very unrelated, unconscious way of claiming, of asserting what he wants.
Could that be slightly cultural too? I mean, I don't pretend to know much about arranged marriages, but that's the necessary wooing skills back in those times weren't necessary.
Well, but there's a contrast, because later on in the story, something very different happens. So the story, within the story, there's a very strong contrast being made between his behavior in the beginning and his behavior, what happens between them near the end. It's dramatically different. So you know that there's an internal comparison. Psychologically, we could say that there's an attraction or a romance, but there's no relating. You know, he thinks she's very beautiful, but he doesn't relate to her in any way. He just demands that she be given.
Right, so, and he doesn't even care, like, your path, you know, go down the path, and when you see this, go do that. It's like not involved in it.
As soon as he gets married, then he goes off and hunts foxes.
Right.
He's not in relationship with this person, mm-hmm. He's just grabbed in
possession.
Very immature.
This is the end of part 1. The discussion continues in the next 2 parts. Thank you.